Welcome to the Front Judge Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. In a moment, I'll be joined by my colleague, Mike Neff, to break down a busy news week and a wild race weekend at the Roval. Chase Elliott came back to win after crashing from the lead late in the final stage. He also had what was probably the best burnout of the year. Alex Bowman found himself in the middle of controversy several times during the race weekend, but ultimately raced his way into the round of 12 by finishing second. Last weekend, Roush Fenway Racing announced Chris Buescher would replace Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in what seemed to blindside both Stenhouse and JTG Doherty Racing owner Tad Geschichter. We'll give our thoughts on that. And finally, Tyler Reddick will join the show to discuss his playoff outlook as he's in a good position to advance to the round of 8 heading into this weekend's event at Dover. But before we get started, Neff, we got a sponsor this week, so why don't you tell our listeners about Eastern Shore Screen Printing.
Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. This week, we are sponsored by Eastern Shore Screen Printing, Delaware's choice for custom apparel, graphic design, and promotional items. They're located on Route 13 in Felton next to the Auto Action. Stop in their showroom and talk with them about your next great printing project. T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, business cards, signs, banners, and more. Get it all at Eastern Shore Screen Printing.
For sure. And this is the real deal. If you guys are in Dover this weekend for the NASCAR race, or even if you're not from Dover, or you just visited the town, definitely visit Eastern Shore Screen Printing, as you said, Neff, in Felton. They have a website, too. It's a cool little website, easternshorescreenprinting.com. That's where you can find all the information and details about that company.
Yeah, if you're going to be camping in Delaware and you want people to be able to find your camper, or if you got a group together and y'all want to be able to wear something that signifies your group together, notify these guys in advance and they can get your stuff done and you can pick it up when you get to town.
For sure. So definitely check out Eastern Shore Screen Printing in Delaware. Now, Neff, we got a lot to talk about this week as I went down in the breakdown here. Lots happened in the past. I mean, we recorded last Sunday the last time, so 9 days. But let's talk about the Roval to kick it off.
Yeah, that'll teach us, won't it?
Yeah. Don't ever record early because a lot of shit will happen. But the Roval, we knew it was going to be a crazy race. Last year was a wild one. But Chase Elliott, he started 19th, came to the front fairly quickly, definitely had the best car, the quickest car, crashed there at the beginning of the final stage and ultimately came back to win the race with hands down the best car.
Yeah, there was no question about it. You could see it during the race. Even when a race started, he was flying early on, and whenever they came in, if they got behind people, it took him almost no time to get past. I was interested. I talked to him post-race about how he was making passes, because usually when you think road racing, you think outbreaking people and getting down inside of them in braking zones. But most every pass that he put on was powering out of corners and leaving people as he was coming out of corners, which I thought was really interesting. But the way that they had that car set, his drive off was so much better than everybody else's, and it was just a matter of managing time and tires, which amazingly we did find out tires made a difference this week.
And that's interesting because, you know, he did have good drive off, but he was also really, really good into the braking zones. The front chicane, for sure, he made up a ton of time on a bunch of different drivers. And then also the back chicane and getting off into oval. I'll call it the Charlotte Oval Turn 1. I know NBC was calling it NASCAR 1 or whatever.
Oh, dude, people were losing their minds about that.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, I feel like they should probably because it's just the oval. And, you know, NASCAR is racing at the Roval and the oval. So I would...
You got to be fair. It's a throwback to Daytona.
Right.
And when you run the 24 hours of Daytona on the road course of Daytona, they call it NASCAR 1 and 2 or NASCAR 3 and 4. So that's the lingo of Roval racing, as it were. I understood everybody being upset because it is a NASCAR race. So you're not really doing a NASCAR 1. So I agree with you on that. Probably calling it Oval 1 and 2 is better, but I understood where the logic came from that they were using.
Regardless, the nine car made up a lot of speed coming off that corner. I think that's where he passed Harvick for the lead, if I'm not mistaken, three and a half laps to go, whenever that final restart was. But Neff, Chase has proved to be a pretty damn good road course driver. That's 3 wins in the last 5 road course races, 2 of them obviously coming at Watkins Glen, one of them being earlier this year. I don't know where he learned a road race, but he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, I agree. I do not know where that came from either, but he has definitely taken to that like a duck to water. They had another one at, I believe it was Sonoma, that he was either leading or near the front, and they had an engine failure.
Right.
So you look at that. I mean, he has usurped Martin Truex Jr. as the best road course racer in the sport, I think, in just the last couple of years, because it's I'm like you. I don't know that he ever did a lot of road racing coming up. Everything I know of him was super late models and oval racing, but there is no doubt about it that if you're going to win a road course in the sport these days, you're going to have to go through that 19.
Yeah, and I did some research. He right now is ranked third on active wins in the Cup Series, and Kyle Busch and Martin Truex both have four on road courses. So, you know, Chase is obviously in the infancy of his career, this being his fourth full-time year at the Cup level, so not too shabby over the past five races on road courses. Neff, a lot of stuff to talk about, but with Chase, I do want to elaborate a little bit more because, you know, he's won at two road courses now and a super speedway race. Hasn't won this year. Hasn't won on your traditional oval style race. I guess you could call Talladega traditional or untraditional, depending on how you look at it. But where do you feel like this 19's at? Because they're obviously locked into the round of 12. And it seems like they Hendrick's shown speed at times this year, but then at other times they've been out to lunch.
I mean, all of Hendrick Motorsports has been the same way. You know, we saw Bowman win at Chicago, and 2 weeks later it was like he couldn't get out of his own way. So it's kind of in them in general, but I feel like they've been better the second half than they were in the first half. And I think they're at least in contention. We've seen what he can do at Martinsville. He obviously knows how to get around there, but it's the mile and a half stuff is where it's a little more questionable. And I don't know that it's not, I mean, he knows how to drive it. It's just a matter of having their cars be that competitive there. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I feel like in general, overall, they have improved their program, and it's a matter of getting it in gear on these last couple mile and a half that they're going to run before they get to Homestead, so that he's got a shot at Homestead. And one other thing about the roller race, it was so nice walking down pit lane and walking around in the garage this weekend, seeing cars that were not basically sitting on the ground because of the rumble strips or turtles or bumps or whatever you want to call these things. They had to have the cars off the ground. And it was more of a throwback to the old days of getting your platform down on the ground as it got up to speed. It was really kind of refreshing to see that again. We'll keep the fingers crossed we see more of that in the future.
Yeah, and I brought it up in the opening. What'd you think about the burnout with Chase going back to where
was fun. I know it obviously wasn't intended to be that way. It was cool. And he talked about it in his post-race. He's like, as he was coming towards the start-finish line after having taken his cool-down lap, he saw that spot, and he was just like, I'm going to go back and pay it another visit. But, you know, then he got out of the car and was standing on it, and it rolled back out of the smoke. I mean, again, it wasn't intended, but it was a really cool look, and I will not be surprised to see in the future the same type thing happen. And I know that's one of the deals. Everybody has their own take on burnouts and whether they like them or don't like them. I know that is one of Kyle Busch's goals whenever he does his burnouts, is to have it be so smoky that he can get out of the car and be standing on the window by the time the smoke clears, so he kind of emerges from the smoke. And now that I've seen Chase do this one, we may see more guys trying to emerge from the smoke by leaving their car in neutral and letting it roll down a hill, but odds are somebody will get run over when that happens, and then they'll do away with burnouts.
Yeah, this one was, you know, the significance of this one was obviously where he crashed. When he was just carrying too much speed, you know, earlier in that stage. I think it was at the beginning of stage three. And, you know, he mentioned it was like the worst screw up of his life. He said over the radio, I don't know how I just did that. It was cool to see him go back to the site of where that happened and, you know, do the burnout. A lot of smoke, like you said, and then, like you said, he was picking up a ton of speed while standing on top of the car. Rick Hendrick is probably holding his breath for a minute or two.
Yeah, the way he jumped off there, it was weird, because it looked like that car was going about 10 miles an hour, and when he jumped off, he just stopped. It was very interesting.
Regardless. But now, another Hendrick driver you brought up was Alex Bowman. He had himself a day. really a weekend.
He had a weekend.
Yeah. So it started off on Friday. He qualified second. You know, he's shown good speed. He had a decent roval race last year, finishing, I think, fourth. But then 40 seconds to go on final practice on Saturday, crashes and goes to a backup car. So he starts the race on Sunday with no laps in this car, albeit it was the car from last year that they raced at the Roval. And, you know, first lap, wheel hops going into the backstretch chicane, takes out Bubba Wallace, a couple other guys get into it. NASCAR doesn't throw a caution, which we'll get into in a few minutes. And then, you know, he had incident later with Bubba, obviously, which we'll also talk about. Bubba was giving him the finger. He wrecks Bubba, hooks him in the right rear, turns him into the wall. He had a spin late in stage one as well, with Eric Jones, Jimmy Johnson, that big pileup and heartburn turn. And came back, you know, he had tires there at the end, finished second. He passed some of the elites in NASCAR to get to second, ultimately pointing his way in via Ryan Newman kind of messing up there, you know, with, what, two to go or whatever. And Eric Almirola getting by, and Newman having to do a stop and go. So Bowman gets in. He gets the last transfer spot into the round of 12, but really had himself quite the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you said a mouthful there. Where do you begin? You know, it's funny. We had two Hendrick drivers make mistakes that they wanted to crawl into a hole and bury themselves in after they did it. But yeah, Bowman's, like you said, practice has come to an end. It's his last lap of practice before race time, and spun it out, made contact. They tried really hard to figure out if they were going to be able to salvage that car, and it just wasn't practical and had to go to the backup. And then, like you said, he had an eventful race. The early incident, the incident with Bubba, being involved in another big melee. There were a few other times that I saw him getting out of shape and getting his car off into grass and dirt and what have you. So he was hustling for all he was worth pretty much all weekend long. But when it came down to brass tacks there at the very end, I didn't think he had a shot. I really didn't think he was going to be able to get by those guys that were that good at the front of the pack. But man, it showed what a good road racer he is. I mean, because he was going up against guys that are no slouches on road courses, and he flat out outworked them and didn't have to rough them up to get by them. So it was an impressive display. On top of that, and I didn't hear about this until Saturday, was he was actually feeling under the weather,
right?
When that whole spin-out happened. And that was where, when you got to the end of the race and he was got out of the car, he was in not good shape. And he wasn't the only one for that, by the way. Everybody except for Jimmy Johnson and, ironically, Kevin Harvick, the rest of the competitors that I saw all looked like they were about ready to fall out when they got out of their cars. But yeah, Bowman was one of them that fell out, and we'll get into that here in just a minute.
Interesting. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned how he passed a lot of those drivers there at the end. Clint Bowyer, Kevin Harvick, and Bowyer, and you heard it over the team radio, they were telling Bowyer just pretty much get out of the way. Let Bowman by, because he's going to be aggressive. He needs points. You heard spotter Brett Griffin tell Clint that. And so he got by Clint fast. He got by Truex, who Truex, like we said, is arguably the best road racer, along with Chase right now. Harvick, I mean, if Chase had the best car, Harvick, I would say, had the second best car. He led a ton of laps. And had there not been a lot of the late cautions, I think Harvick probably would have won. Because I don't think Chase would have been able to make up that much of a difference with that few amount of laps left. But yeah, Alex had a great race and really a character building race for that 88 team. It's their first top five finish since the win at Chicago 3 months ago, which is crazy because he had, you know, a rash of top five second place finishes in all the round of 12 races earlier this year, Dover, Talladega, and Kansas. So this round coming up seems like it's going to bode well for them if you base it off the spring, which you can't really do. But, I mean, that's got to give them some sort of confidence and momentum going forward enough compared to what they had going into this weekend, which was really nothing over the past couple months.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They went into this weekend doubting themselves. I mean, they won't tell you that. They'll never tell you that. But knowing where they were and what they had to do, I don't know that they felt like they could get it done. And to rebound it from the backup car to fixing damage after two or three incidents and getting him in a position to come out. And I don't know, again, I was on pit lane and didn't have a headset on to hear the radio of it. Why did they bring him in at the very beginning of the race? Was there something that they weren't able to change during pre-race that they had to make an adjustment for? Because he came in at the end of the first lap.
They said he missed the chicane, even though he spun through it. So that even though he missed the chicane and spun, that, I mean, that's a penalty within itself. They still made him do a penalty.
Interesting.
And he needed four tires for the. He thought he flat spotted his tires.
So, I don't buy that because I was down on the turn one end of pit lane, and I saw him come in, and then they black flagged him.
Right.
Like two laps later.
That was,
which I assumed was a speeding thing.
No, that was for the chicane.
Gotcha.
So yeah, yeah. But like you said, you know, character building day for this team and Alex, because as I said, this round of 12 seems like it bodes up well for that team. But Neff, the bigger story after the race anyway, involving Alex, was with Bubba Wallace as well. I want to be careful with how I word this, but I thought it was a little unclassy by Bubba to come down after the race. Obviously, I'm sure people have seen it by now. If you haven't, you've probably been living under a rock. But he came down from where he finished, like 24th. So that means Bowman finished second. He came all the way down pit road. Jerry Jordan from Kicking the Tires has a good video of this. He followed Bubba down pit road.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. But I meant to talk to Jordan afterwards, and I didn't, to find out if he had been given a heads up or something.
Right.
Because it was just odd that he was down there. Because, like you said, the top finishers were at pit stall 21. And the outside the top 10s were starting at pit stall 33 or 34.
Right.
So he had to walk 200, 250 yards to get up there. And Jerry had to be down there to begin with. And you would think he would be up there by all the top finishers. So that's why I feel like Jerry might have been given a heads up. But
regardless, he has a good video following Bubba down to the 88 crew. And then ultimately, he went right through the crew, went through the crowd, up to Bubba, and went up to Alex, I should say. Splash Alex in the face with some kind of liquid. It looked like a Powerade or some sort of blue liquid from what I could tell. And Bowman, like you said, Neff, was hunched up over his car, sitting next to it, sick, dehydrated for sure after that race because it was hot in Charlotte. I think it's a little unclassy, like I said, but what's your take on this? Because Bubba, you know, was obviously pissed off and rightfully so for getting hooked in the right rear. But when you see a man down, and he didn't literally kick him, but it's kind of like kicking a man down while he's down.
I guess the problem comes in as to what he's really getting medical treatment for and why he's down. I mean, it was basically dehydrated. Everybody, like I said, that got out of their cars looked like they were dehydrated. Part of that being, and we'll get into this when we get to the whole discussion of officiating races, but when they had the red flag for 8 minutes and however many seconds, they didn't have enough water for all the drivers. So there were drivers that didn't get any refreshment during that red flag, which was kind of a bummer. But you walk, again, you're mad enough that you want to go confront somebody. You walk 250 yards to get to them, and they're sitting down next to their car. Granted, there's a medical person there. Jeff Gordon's there. Bubba actually talked to him and said a couple things. Alex gave him a response, which I don't think he appreciated. And at that point, he threw the liquid on him. So I would have rather him not thrown the liquid on him, but I was happy that he didn't punch him. Right. If he had punched him, I would have really thought there was a problem because you can't punch somebody that's, like, obviously in distress. But he can argue that he gave him the liquid because he was trying to help him cool down because he was overheated. So I think that was actually a kind gesture. But, you know, if you're going to walk that far, you're not going to not do something. So I understood it. He probably deserves a little talking to, which I believe O'Donnell's going to give him, but I don't think there should be anything more coming out of it. I loved how so many people freaked out that Jeff Gordon got moist. I just that cracked me up that people were freaking out. Like, not only was the NASCAR medical person doused, but Jeff Gordon got wet. And I'm like, yeah, Jeff Gordon got in a fight with Brad Keselowski on pit lane before. So I don't think he's really, I think he understands that temperatures get hot. So I would have rather it not happen, but I'm not surprised it happened. I'm glad he didn't punch him. And I think the message was delivered. I also think we'll probably see this continue. They got together, I believe it was in Vegas, too.
Richmond. I mean, Richmond.
This has been going for a little while, and I don't think it's going to stop. So eventually it'll probably boil over into something bigger. But
yeah, and that's unfortunate because, you know, Bowman's not known to be a dirty driver, but the past couple of weeks he's kind of been a wrecking ball. Between the Austin Dillon incident at Richmond, he also got into Bubba at Richmond. Bowman said this after the race, that Bubba gave him the finger at Richmond as well. And then he said he gave him to him for three or four.
Racing.
Yeah, and I agree.
That's part of racing, is flipping people off.
And Bubba's known. I mean, we saw this with Suarez after Pocono. Suarez was pissed off that he also was getting the finger for multiple laps. So, I mean, Bubba's known to, you know, give the finger, it seems like, a little more excessively than other drivers. But
it's his communication method.
Right. And Bowman had enough and dumped him, which is, I mean, I would be upset too if I was Bubba Wallace and I got dumped and you were having a decent run. So, yeah.
Well, and it wasn't just dumped. He got on his bumper, forced him into the chicane, hit him in his chicane, and then dumped him on the way out.
Right.
So he actually made contact with him three times in that instant.
Yeah, so I guess don't give Alex Bowman the finger. Although, you know, post-race, I thought Kyle Petty said it perfectly. You need thicker skin talking to Absolutely. Alex Bowman. So, yeah, interesting development. And I agree with you. I think this could continue over. And he seems like Alex is kind of making every team, other than Hendrick, under the Chevy banner, kind of upset with him right now. With Richard Petty Motorsports, RCR, who's next? But, you know, I don't know. I think Alex has a good shot of advancing the round of eight. Like I said earlier this year, when he's on the podcast, he's been sneaky fast at times this year. And I don't know, maybe this is a sign of things to come. Neff, any other things on the cup race of the Roval besides, you know, before we get into the officiating?
I think we got to give a shout out to Corey LaJoy.
The turtle
is exactly, he's just becoming a star in this sport outside of his driving ability. I mean, he's got driving ability, and I think it's ultimately going to shine through when he eventually gets into a quality ride, which I think he will. But in the meantime, he has become the people's champion by just the things he's doing and the fact that they went out there. And I still can't believe no security personnel showed up during that entire process. That's the part I don't get. How does somebody go out there on the race course and basically do an art project without anybody from security coming by going, what are you doing? But I love that it came out. I hope they go through it. I saw something where Marcus Smith was talking about taking that piece up.
They did.
And auctioning it off for children's Speedway Children's Charities, which I think will be great. I think he's crazy if next year they don't have him all over the place. if there's a Ninja Turtle movie coming out or a game or something, somebody's got to get on this to where we have turtle themes around there. But Corey is a great guy. He is a master at interacting with fans, with social media, with telling the truth and being blunt without being obnoxious. I love the guy. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. And he says he's got an announcement coming up very soon that's going to be life-changing. So I'm hoping he's getting into a better ride for next year.
Oh, so you didn't see the announcement?
No.
Got it. So we're recording Tuesday around 3 p.m. right now. Him and Kelly announced that they're having a kid. Yeah, in April. So that was the announcement.
Well, golly, I'm excited he finally got laid.
Congrats to Corey and Kelly for sure. Corey's
that is more life-changing than a new ride, I'll tell you that.
Of course. So, yeah, baby shoe coming into the world. They're thinking Easter, roughly Easter. So, good for them. Like you said, Corey's great guy, been on this podcast plenty of times, was our first guest for a driver. You know, he made a Skype just for us. So, back then when we did that. So, you know, good stuff. The Ninja Turtles was awesome. He has a great way of branding himself and then even getting outside that brand and just doing cool stuff. He's a fun guy to hang out with. But I also think we should give a shout out to Ryan Newman Neff, because I know he didn't make the round of 12, but that guy was wheeling that six car on Sunday and really all season long. I know he got penalized there at the end. It was his first finish outside the top 25 all year long. At this point last year, the six car had 11 of them. So, I mean, you talk about, and this will get into one of our points later with Ricky Stenhouse, but how much he's elevated that six car, but really Roush Fenway as a whole, I would say, even though the 17 team may not have the results to back it up, but they have shown speed.
Yeah, I would agree. And he was very interesting post-race. One of the themes that I was asking a bunch of the different drivers when I got out of the cars was the heat, because it was hot on Sunday. And as I said, Joey Logano came over and he was like laying on the railing. He couldn't even stand up. Boyer was soaked. Keselowski had a cold rag under his hat. His uniform was soaked. And Newman came over and he had gotten on the radio with like 15 or 20 laps to go and said, y'all are going to have ice and water for me when I get out of this car because I'm going to need it. And so when he came over to the bullpen, I asked him, like, I heard you talking about how overheated you were. Did the heat today, was it more than you're used to? And what did it have an impact on racing? And he went off about the fact that NASCAR needs to invest in a farmer's almanac and they need to analyze the weather so that they can schedule these races better. And Claire jumped in and said, are you insinuating they should reschedule this race? And he's like, I promise you it's 65 and beautiful and Loudon this weekend, and I'd have been happy to be there racing along with all the fans that would have packed that place out. He's like, if I was bringing my family to a race, I would damn sure not bring them to sit out here in 95-degree heat in aluminum bleachers.
That's a fair point.
And I was like, okay. Now, mind you, this seats at Charlotte for the vast majority of them are not aluminum bleachers, but this was also an exceptionally warm date for this race. Usually it's cooler than that. Plus, it's usually later in the year. And next year it does go back to Columbus Day where it always used to be run. So I think maybe they have read their almanac. But he did a great job all day until he missed a chicane. And he was that close to being in. And unfortunately, that one little step. And that's, again, where you go and you look back and you're like, there's so many other things that you did that impacted where you were, but that one little move is what knocked him out of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, and his, you know, I'm surprised he could even drive that car. That thing was like, looked like a tank. It had the front end was all caved in from getting into Ryan Preece twice. He got involved in three late crashes. And the rear end was pretty much torn to pieces, so, I mean, he ended up finishing 32nd, like I said, only because he had to do a stop and go, I believe, for a penalty for missing that chicane that you alluded to. But, you know, he put on a show, and that's what we expect of Ryan Newman. Because, I mean, he has to. He doesn't have the sheer speed in the six car, but he always gets the most out of it. So
yeah, and there were a few shows. I mean, between Bowman and Elliott and Newman, and, I mean, Kyle Busch was fast until they damaged their sway bar.
Sure.
And then I know he got roasted over the coals a little bit for getting out of the car with the red flag, but there was no point in there was nothing to be gained, and if anything, they had a better chance of tearing up their car. So I thought it was
or
a
other
prudent
cars
move to actually get out of it. Yeah, I thought it was a prudent move to get out of it.
Yeah. So in addition to Newman, you got Eric Jones, who had no luck in the round of 12 at all, had an average finish of 38th in the three races. Kurt Busch, who said I forget his quote, he said it was pretty much a disaster of a first round, and then Eric Almirola missing the round of 12. So, yeah.
Yeah, Almirola, I didn't see Jones because they interviewed him. He wasn't at the bullpen,
but probably, I saw Almirola. Home.
And, I mean, Kurt was disappointed, but Almirola looked devastated. He legitimately looked just incredibly upset about the fact that they did not advance. And I don't know. They never announced anything. I don't know if they ever will, but I sure felt like something broke on that car because it, for the last 35 or 40 laps, it just didn't seem right. And they came in and put fresh tires on it. Fresh tires didn't really make a difference for them. and it did for everybody else. So that's why I'm thinking something was not right.
He was also racing behind Ryan Newman, and as we know, Ryan Newman's hard to get by. But I agree.
There is that.
I agree, though, that, you know, it did look like that 10 car was a bit off, and he was on the same strategy that Bowyer was on, and Bowyer could stay up there. And once Almirola kind of fell back, he was just in the trenches and couldn't get out of it. So, he had to be called to pit road and couldn't ever get back his track position, and ultimately misses the round of 12. But Neff, we've kind of been prepping this, but the officiating on Sunday was questionable at best. We had a bunch of calls that shouldn't have been calls, or calls that weren't called, should have been. It was a disaster, honestly. And it's been that way, as we've talked about many a times this year, for a lot of this year. But I feel like it stuck out like a sore thumb, especially this weekend. And maybe that's because it's at a road course, and when you have a single car spin, it probably should not be a caution. Now, if it's in the middle of traffic, you could argue it probably should be a caution. But, you know, let's just take it not one by one, but let's take out some that stick out. First lap, Alex Bowman, piles in to the chicane, as we talked about earlier. They don't call a caution. And he spun out, I believe a couple other cars spun out. The day before, in the Xfinity race, same thing happened. There's a caution.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if anyone has listened to Jeff Gluck, but apparently he's talked to, you know, on his podcast in The Athletic, and also he was on Door Bumper Clear this week with Brett Griffin and Casey Boat and, why am I forgetting, Junior's old spotter, Logano's spotter.
TJ Majors,
yes. And Gluck said that he talked to NASCAR, Mike Ford, who is a PR for NASCAR, and he said that the Roval is the hardest course in NASCAR to officiate. There's 17 turns, and there's only 5 people in the booth calling the race. Now, we talked about this off air, and yes, there are locals, I guess you call them spotters or officials around the track, but say a car spins, and by the time an official in the booth sees that car and it's already moved, that's not going to be a caution, which it should be. That's the way it should be.
Right.
But then if they see a car still spinning, and even if it's only a single car spin, like a Ryan Preece on lap 21, when he spun, I believe it was in the chicane as well, the backstretch chicane, he was still there, and they threw a caution. And that was – he didn't even go – I mean, he went around, but then he kept going. So
– And that's where if the local guy calls it, they look up and you don't see a car stop, they don't call it, okay, that's the way it should be. But if you see a car sliding, you should let it play out. I mean, unless it's legitimately like in front of the entire pack, in which case you try to throw it out as quick as you can. But if it's a single car incident, I mean, I argued that. We talked about it a couple weeks ago when Byron spun at Vegas. He was trying to get to pit lane with a flat tire. He kind of slid out and it went straight down pit lane. He wasn't in front of anybody. He had one car that had to make an evasive maneuver. There was no reason to call it a caution. If the car is not stopped in a position where it's going to impact the racing line, then you give them a chance to try to get the thing rolling. If it eventually won't start, then yeah, you're stuck throwing a caution. But the fact that we try to be so fast with these cautions, and you can decide for yourself why. I argue that it's because the only real action is really on restarts, and that's why they try to get them whenever they can. But we saw it 2 years ago at Richmond with Matt Kenseth locking up his right front tire. I mean, he didn't even spin. He just had smoke, and they freaked out through it. So it's – I think we need to be a little more patient. We need to officiate – all race like we do the last 5 laps of the race.
Yeah. And I don't know, it was, what stage was it at? Was it at when there was a, I think it was then a stage 2, there was a caution and they didn't end up going, and there was like 7 laps of caution, and then the stage ended, so there's another couple laps. That's at the Roval. And
yeah,
it takes forever,
like 9 minutes to run a caution lap.
I mean, to get around there at speed. So yeah, I mean, I would say at least 3 minutes at the minimum. And I didn't time it, so I would say it's even more, but unreal. Some of that, and I was very vocal on Twitter about it. I don't know. It's nothing against NASCAR. I just don't think they officiated the race correctly. And not saying I'd do a better job or anything like that, but like you said,
but at the same time, I think there should be, and maybe there is, and we just don't know about it, but I think there should be a review process just like there is for any major sport. Umpires get reviewed, NFL referees get reviewed, NBA referees get reviewed, NHL referees get reviewed. If they do a bad job, they get demoted, and they get games that they miss, and they ultimately can get fired. And I think the same thing should be going on with your race directors. If they're doing a bad job and you review them and they don't get better, they should have to miss races and ultimately lose their jobs.
Yeah, I tweeted out that I don't remember which caution it was for, but it was for one of the stages. There was a 15-minute caution. Like, they were under caution for 15 minutes, just riding around. So that's probably five, six laps at least. And it's just, I don't know. And then also towards the end, I think it was the last, it was for the red flag, but they ran a few laps under caution. Oil got leaked down. Then they throw the red flag. And we talked about this a few weeks ago at with the Keselowski incident at Indy.
Yeah, I did give them credit for that because they were actually had taken the one to go, and then the 52 had their problem. And as soon as the 52 had a problem and they saw that there was fluid down, they threw the red. So I did give them credit on that. They actually didn't drive around once the liquid was down.
Correct, but to counter that, that one to go came after another one to go when they didn't have the order correct. And that's something that's been an issue all year long.
That's, yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going to champion a change of procedure for that whole thing. That whenever they finish pit stops, you give them, you know, the lap cars, the lead lap cars, and then the lap cars. As the lap cars come off a pit lane, they stop the field at the end of the backstretch and have them roll off in the order that they're going to be in so that we eliminate all of this people in the wrong position crap.
Yeah, and then on the final lap, or coming to the final lap, I guess they were, Newman made an evasive move high because he didn't know if he had to pit to serve his penalty or to stop in the restart zone. He ultimately did neither. I think he just got moved to the final car on the lead lap. And, you know, Daniel Suarez went to miss him, hit the wall, came back down, plowed into Daniel Hemric. Suarez wasn't happy after the race. If you're going to call a caution all day long, that should have been the caution.
Yeah,
so,
because he was stopped in the lane, in the groove, for a long time.
And I get they were going, you know, approaching the last lap, the leaders were on the last lap, but that really doesn't matter.
Nope.
And I know they want, you know, everyone wants the race to end under green, but if we're going to call a caution, that's a caution. So,
yep.
I don't know, some of these one, and even the Chase Elliott, we were talking off air about this, when he drove into turn one, this was only a one lap caution, but he hit the tire barrier. But I don't know how he flew this thing into reverse or shifted into reverse so fast enough, but that arguably shouldn't have been a caution either.
Yeah, I actually asked him a little bit about that post, or somebody before me asked that, as to getting in reverse that fast. And he said, because he knew before he contacted the tire barrier that he was going to contact the tire barrier. So he said that he had actually already hit the clutch, was in neutral, and finding reverse before he made contact with the barrier. So that was how he got to it that quick. But I agree with you. There were no cars on the paint. He was under power as he bounced off the tires and turned right on around and started heading down the road. And it was what it was. I mean, there was no reason whatsoever to call that a caution.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. And it's
very, very.
I know they're, you know, kind of, I don't even want to say get in a rhythm because it doesn't seem like they're in a rhythm, but they're kind of establishing new leadership in that role because David Hoot stepped down after the 500 in February, but we're 8 months into the year now. And I get, I'm sure road courses are a lot harder than most other tracks, but you can actually see this full road course. You can't see Watkins Glen. And I think you can see most of Sonoma, but you can see all of the Roval. So, and that's just frustrating. And like we said, it takes a minute 20 to get around there. I think that was the top qualifying speed. And if it's a single car spin, I don't know. If they're not in traffic, it shouldn't be a caution. Just my opinion. But whatever, Neff, we got a lot to talk about. I want to bring this up here because I don't know where else we could place in the show. But I want to get your reaction to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. being, I guess, released by Roush, and then Chris Busch. I guess Chris Busch, you know, it'd be better said Chris Buescher just got signed or retained, as they put it, by Roush Fenway Racing. He obviously raced for them years back in the Xfinity Series. won the 2015 Xfinity title for Roush before going to front row in a partnership with Roush. Then he went to JTG for obviously the past 3 years. You know, he's improved that 37 team a bunch this year, so much. He's got, you know, he had 16 top 20 finishes in a row, and that ended last week at Richmond. But he's improved that team a ton, got his contract retained, replaces Stenhouse in the 17 for next year. Stenhouse didn't find out until the day of. That's where I have a little bit of a problem. But what says you, Neff?
Well, we have to remember who they're driving for. Jack Roush has probably got the worst people skills of anybody in the sport. And it's not, you know, this was surprising the way this was handled, but at the same time, it's not, because there have been a myriad of things like this through his career, because Jack's not a communicator. And so stuff like this happens. But I thought it was very interesting that apparently Buescher was on a 5-year contract with Roush, or a 4-year with an option. And so they decided to pick up the option and have him go into 17. So that's the curious thing to me, is how there's so many lawyers involved in everything that goes on in this sport, because of the fact that the teams are independent contractors, that nobody in either organization seems to have known that that he was still under contract with Roush. I'm like, who's signing his checks? You know, if he's under a Roush contract, is Roush not paying him? So I thought that was very curious. The fact that I understand it, that Ricky has underperformed based on looking at Newman. If you look at when he's been up against other guys, not so much. But I think that partnership had just kind of run its course. But I really feel like somebody in a legal department knew that they were going to pull this maneuver a while ago. They had to have researched it and figured out that this was in place. And so he should have been given his opportunity to find another job starting in July, August-ish.
Right.
Instead of beginning of October. And that's where I feel bad for Ricky in that point. I think he'll end up somewhere. I don't know where. Ford has always liked him, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him at front row. But who knows?
Yeah.
I'm excited for Buescher. I think Buescher and Newman as teammates would be a great combination, because they have very different personalities, but their driving styles are very similar. And Buescher is very aggressive. And I think it'll be good to have him paired up with Newman if he is. I don't even know that Newman's got a deal for next year or not. I don't know where that state is, but
yeah, he does.
It's cool. I'm curious what JTG is going to do. I feel bad for them too.
Yeah, because they didn't know.
Because you're sitting here at the beginning of October now. You got to go find a driver. There's probably, the way this stuff usually works, most of your promotional crap that you're going to have rolled out at Daytona is already being photographed in September and October. So now they're going to have to go through a whole thing and figure out who they're going to have, make sure they've signed agreements with sponsors and what have you, and then get all that promotional stuff done. So yeah, it's kind of throwing everybody else for a loop. I feel bad for all parties involved that it was dropped when it was dropped. But it is what it is. I look forward to seeing Buescher in the 17. I think he can do things in that car. I look forward to seeing where Ricky ends up and seeing what he can do wherever he ends up.
Yeah, and so you hit on a lot there. I'm going to try and...
Of course I do. That's what I do.
I'm going to try and hit a lot of those points. So for the Stenhouse part, I feel terribly for him, because to my knowledge, there was a point or there was a date that Buescher needed, or JTG and Buescher needed to align. And once that date passed, but JTG seems like they didn't know about that date, he could then go back to Roush. That date had passed, so Roush, as soon as that date passed, he got a hold of Roush and said, you know, I'm free. And apparently Roush wanted him back, which I'm super happy for Buescher too. I think it's a good opportunity. But as you said, Jack Roush, I mean, in my opinion, it comes off shady as hell for the way this got kind of handled. the same thing happened last year with Trevor Bayhn, with Matt Kenseth replacing him for a certain amount of races. Bayhn didn't know that until his friend Michael McDowell texted him. Bayhn had no idea. So, I don't know. We've seen it happen plenty of times with this organization just recently, which is kind of hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to do with the current landscape in racing and also media PR. But also, I don't know. It's just shady to me. Like I said, happy for Buescher. But for Stenhouse, you know, you think of what he's done for this organization. He's got – Roush has been out to lunch for years now. Yep. You know, Newman, like we said, he's brought in fresh blood and a new kind of atmosphere into that team. He outperformed his equipment for sure. But that team has been bad really for 5 years. Maybe not bad. Maybe bad's too much of an extreme of a word. But it's been off. It's been like a 20th place team. And Stenhouse got two wins for them, albeit at restrictor plate races at the time, Daytona and Talladega. But still, he's got Jack Roush's last two wins. So then on Friday in the media, for Jack to say, you know, we're going to stop wrecking cars and we're going to focus on points racing or whatever he said. He mentioned stop wrecking cars, which is a direct shot at Ricky Stenhouse. Because we all know Stenhouse is notoriously known for wrecking cars. I feel like that's because he's got to get the most out of those cars, and they're not fast enough, and he overdrives them. So is that his fault? Yes, we know that. But still, I don't think he needed to take a direct shot for someone that's got him his last two Cup wins, and also a guy that's gotten two Xfinity Series championships for him in 2011 and 2012. Now, and it was also, yeah, you said terrible to do it in late September. Now we're in October, and really there's not many options out there. The other part of this is JTG didn't know, and that surprised the hell out of me when I saw a video that Bob Pockers put out. I think it was on Friday or Saturday. He talked to Tad Geschichter, co-owner of JTG, and they said, you know, they didn't know until everyone else knew. How? That's the part that I don't understand. How do you not know? And granted, that 37 car is going to be a hot commodity. There's going to be a lot of drivers, whether it's your Corey LaJoy, Ross Chastain, Brett Moffitt, Stenhouse, Daniel Hemric. There's a lot of viable candidates for that ride. So I'm interested to see who gets it. They really don't have to bring a ton of sponsorship because, as you said, the promotional work. Well, JTG has a ton of sponsors. I mean, you see Buescher's car. It's got a different paint scheme every week. So, I mean, that's going to be a hot ride. Someone's going to land a good opportunity. We saw what Buescher can do in that car. I was rubbed the wrong way about how all of this was handled. I thought it could have been a much differently, but hey, I mean, you're a Cubs fan. Joe Maddon got fired this weekend for, you know, winning a World Series 3 years ago.
Did not get fired.
Whatever happened.
His contract expired. They decided to go a different direction. It's a performance-based business. I would have stuck with Joe Maddon until he was 105 years old and died in the dugout, but that's because I'm a longtime Cubs fan, and that was the deal. But, I mean, we've seen a lot of people lose rides that you didn't really understand why, that had done things for organizations, and I feel like the Ricky thing had run its course. I think it's good for Ricky to go someplace else. I just, like you said, I would like to have seen him had a little more time to secure it. But I'm with you. He would be great in that 37. I think he and Trent Owens would work great together.
Right.
But I'm feeling like front row is where he's going to go, and they're going to get, and again, probably because we're biased, but I really hope Corey LaJoy ends up in that 37 because I think he could win races in that car.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. We both ran it on that. So I do want to talk a little about Xfinity because that'll tie into our next topic, Neff. AJ Allmendinger got the win at the Roval. Kind of an entertaining race, I thought, for sure.
And past Tech.
Yeah, and past Tech, finally. He's raced 5 races this year, now past Tech in 3 of those 5. Gets credited for the win, which he was pumped up about. And he kind of mentioned post-race how the last couple of years at JTG, ironically, didn't go well. And so he got the win, led 20 laps, and really, you know, he's obviously a road course ace. So a good performance by him. And then Tyler Reddick, our guest this week, finished second.
I asked Reddick after the race if he felt like he was running for the win knowing the history of Allmendinger and Tech. And he said, you know, I hadn't thought about that from this point. And he said, I hope that's not the case. I hope they pass because I want to win it straight up. But, yeah, I thought it was an entertaining race. I really did. I thought there were cars coming and going. Tires, again, made a difference. I thought there was some very aggressive racing. Chase Briscoe comes to mind.
Yeah.
That he and Bell got together, and it was in post-race. He was asked about it, and he said, you know, he and I have been friends for a long time. And we still will be. It's a racing thing, but I felt like I was not given as much room as I probably should have been. And at the same time, Bell felt the same way, that he felt like Briscoe didn't give him enough of a shot to get through that chicane. So that's a racing deal. But the race itself I thought was really entertaining. I liked the fact that there were different strategies going on. And I think Allmendinger showed once again that he's got the chops if he's in a car that can be close to competitive. It doesn't have to be the best car on a track. And he did say post-race that he's never going to say never, but he does not feel like he wants to go back to a full season grind on the NASCAR series.
Interesting. Yeah, good race for Allmendinger. Alex LeBay surprised, I shouldn't say surprised, but impressed the hell out of me. He's a good road racer in Canada, and he raced obviously the full Xfinity schedule last year for DGM, finished a career high sixth, and you know, it's a career best for him and the organization. So, and he was top 10 all day, so good run for that. Yep. 90 team. Like you said, Briscoe and Bell were going at it, and you know, I've listened to a podcast, it was Michael Waltrip's podcast with Briscoe a couple months ago, I would say now, and he mentioned how when he moved to North Carolina, he was staying with Bell. I forget the guy's name, but it was one of his, I think it was a sprint car owner that he ran for Bell ran for. So yeah, they're very close friends, and it looked like Bell just got loose and tagged Briscoe. So the 98 got backed up to ninth, and Bell finished 12th. But Neff, I want to talk about Bell, because since the last time we recorded, we talked last week, we touted him about, you know, who's the last guy that's been touted this high going in the Cup series. And we said maybe Chase Elliott. Ironically, he wins this week. And ironically, in the same week, Bell gets announced as the driver of the 95 for next year, which we saw coming. But it's finally announced. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, it's an interesting development. I still feel like it would have been a solid by Toyota to figure out a way to let Levine have a second car so that Matty D could have stayed in there, but I think Matty D came out smelling like a rose, so I don't feel too bad.
He's fine.
The way that whole thing played out. I think that you're going to see stronger involvement or a stronger partnership between LFR and JGR.
For sure.
And that'll end up benefiting Bell. Glad to see Jason Ratcliffe get back into the Cup Series. Personal buddy of mine, was one of my Tech Talk guys forever. And I think he and Bell have a fantastic relationship because it's one of those father-son deals. You know, Bell is really talented and really good, but he doesn't have that experience yet. And Ratcliffe has been around this game forever. And so him kind of pulling the strings and knowing when to push and when not to push, I think really works well for those two, and I think they're going to be really successful for a long time. I'm glad Bob's finally got a driver announced. I hope sometime in the next 6 years, people finally get off his ass about the way this thing's gone. Because I felt good. I actually saw him in the garage area this weekend and went up and just thanked him for being so open and as honest as he could be with people. Because there's a lot of other owners that never would have got on Twitter at all. And if they had, they would have just ignored people. And Bob has worked very hard at trying to answer as many people as he can and in an honest and open way as he can, knowing the constraints that he's under with his agreements with Toyota and what have you. So I'm pleasantly surprised, or not pleasantly surprised, I'm pleased to see that DiBenedetto ended up somewhere good, but I think Bell is going to be... there was multiple posts this week about who do you think is going to win 100 races, if anybody ever will. And if Kyle Busch doesn't do it, I think Bell is the next guy that's going to have a shot.
That's a bold statement.
And that's I'm not saying he's going to. I'm saying of guys that are going to have a shot. And because we had this discussion last week, you've got all these young bucks that have come in and have not won much right off the bat. And if you're going to win 100 races, you got to start off winning 4 and 5 races a year as soon as you hit Cup.
Right.
Or you're not going to get there. And so that's where I'm like, if Busch doesn't pull it off, and I think there's still a chance, you know, he's probably got 12 to 13 years left. You know, his last year or two, he's not going to win. He may win a race. So you're going to have 11 years. If he averages 5 wins a year over those 11 years, he gets it. He needs his career average right now, eschewing the first couple of years when he didn't win. But once he won, the years that he won, his average wins per year has been 4.25. So if he averages 4.25 over 11 years, he'll be at like 101 wins. And, you know, we don't know what happens when the car comes out in 2021.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that is going to be such a monkey wrench in this, because I was talking with Jeff Hammond this weekend about it. Congratulations to Hollywood for getting the Smokey Unic Award from Charlotte Motor Speedway about this car. And he's like, it's going to be one of two things. And I kind of felt the same way. Either everything's going to be so equal that whoever gets off pit lane first on the last pit stop is going to win the race, or you're going to have two or three drivers that are really going to know how to run the car without using the brakes, which is something that Kyle Busch is really good at, and they're going to blow everybody out of the water and win the vast majority of races. So if that happens, then I think Kyle's got it easy because he'll do it in like 5 years. But if it's an equilibrium thing where it's whoever gets off pit lane first, then it's a crapshoot, and I don't know if I get it or not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. Bold statement. I know you didn't say he will, but I don't know. I don't really, outside of Kyle, I don't know of anybody currently that will. So I don't know if anyone ever will.
I mean, nobody else that's currently in Cup, I don't see it happen.
Right.
Because we don't have anybody that's 20 years old.
Right.
That's already got 15 wins.
Right. But back to Bell. I'm happy it's finally announced. I mean, he's been dodging this question for months. So, and you said, you know, you think there'll be a close relationship with Gibbs. I think it's pretty much going to be a fifth Gibbs car next year because he's under contract with Gibbs. I think that technical support's going to be real tight now. It seems like Gibbs obviously got the driver they want in that car, kind of dictated that whole ordeal. So, I don't know. Good for Bell. I do think he'll win next year. I think he'll make the playoffs. So, like you said, we touted him very highly. I expect him to have a rookie year similar to Chase Elliott, but even better from a couple years ago. So, you know, good for Levine Family Racing, too, because they've been through the ringer the past 8, 9, 10 years, however long they've been in existence. They started out only doing part-time with a whole bunch of different drivers. And then finally, 4 years ago, they went full-time, and they've made drastic improvement over the past few years. Michael McDowell, Casey Kane, Matt DiBenedetto giving them the best year of their career. And now you got Christopher Bell, a person we believe, Neff just said, he thinks that if any other driver's going to get 100 wins, it's going to be Bell. So, I mean, that's a high praise for that driver and that team. Now, will he be there in the long run? Who knows? Because Gibbs has, you know, he's under contract with Gibbs, so we'll see, Neff, but happy that's finally announced. But a few other topics before we get out of here, Neff. I saw a report this week, couple reports, about eliminating pit stops in lower series, so the truck and Xfinity series. I know you're a proponent of this. Why don't you tell the listeners why?
I mean, I've been on a bandwagon for this for a long time. I was around when the truck series started, and that was what we had. You had a halfway break, or you had two breaks, and the teams would come in and have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to make adjustments. And the main reason I like it is that it eliminates having to bring in high-priced, you know, pit stop ringers, where you're looking at, I mean, the guys on pit lane now, your tire changers, tire carriers, Jackman, Gasman, most of them are making somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 to $3,500 per race. So you got five guys going over the wall. You're spending $15,000 per race to have those guys pitch your car. Now, when you go down to the truck series, it's less because they're already on site for the weekend. And so they're willing to take a little bit less for it. But you're still spending $1,500 to $2,000 for those guys. So it's still $8,500 to $10,000 per race to have these guys changing your tires. And if it's a truck race, you're getting maybe two or three pit stops out of them. But you have to do it if you want a chance to win. And so going to pre-described breaks eliminates that need of having these hot shoes to do your changes. And it gives you the opportunity, and it's almost a reward as well, that these guys that work at the shop and build these trucks and build these cars and bring them or get them ready to go to the racetrack can now actually come to the racetrack and enjoy that experience. Because right now, the vast majority, like 95% of the people that work on these cars during the week, don't go to the racetrack because they're not used for the pit stops because they got to have these really fast guys. So for trucks, I think it's if not a must, it's almost a must. For Xfinity, I'm kind of in the air about it. I kind of can go both ways. I would rather not see it happen, but I understand if it does. But it's such an expense that doesn't need to take place in the support series. When you get to Cup, absolutely, let's have them, because that's something that differentiates, and there's so little that differentiates the teams right now. But at the support series level, it's just the cost versus reward on it is just not enough, and I think it's better for the health of the teams if they can go away with it.
Yeah, I agree a lot with you. I'm looking at, and you know, that $15,000 or whatever lower in the truck series adds up pretty quickly on other stuff that you could be spending that money on. Whether it's parts, pieces, whatever. I'm looking at Chris Buescher. So the last year, NASCAR showed the earnings was 2015. So I'm looking at the Xfinity Series. Chris Buescher's team made $1.8 million that year, pretty much $1.89 million. But the average purse is not very high per race. So if you're spending so much money on the pit crew, I mean, where's that other money? You know, you can't really invest. So I don't know. I agree with you. I think it probably, and my opinions kind of change on this, because I feel like the pit crews definitely add to the race. But then you look at K&N, and I mean, a lot of the K&N races are, let's face it, shit shows. A lot of wrecking of each other. But they have a halfway break, maybe even two. I feel like they had two at Bristol just a few weeks ago. So I don't know. It doesn't seem to be that, you know, affect the racing that much.
No, it puts the racing in the driver's hands.
Right.
You take the pit crew piece of it out, and it comes all down to driver.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, let's do it. If it saves money, I mean, I feel like that's what we need to do at the Cup level. I don't know how I feel about it.
No, at the Cup level, I'm fine, because, again, it's a differentiation point.
Right.
At the Cup level. You've got enough differentiations at these support levels that you don't have to do it.
Correct. So, yeah, I feel like that is something that, you know, it looks like it won't be implemented next year, but potentially 2021. So that's probably coming in the near future. Neff, one other topic. I don't know if you saw this, but Ilmor Engineering broke down all the motors. Obviously, Ilmor Engineering provides a lot of the engines to the truck series teams. And they brought, obviously, they had a bad mishap at Las Vegas, the last truck race, which was, 3 weeks ago now. But after the race, they brought the engines back to the shop in Michigan, and they came to the conclusion that there was a high engine load and, you know, high engine load condition combined with the extreme weather, who would have thought, in Las Vegas, that some of the engines just suffered from it. And Thorsport Racing obviously had Johnny Sauter and Grant Enfinger miss the playoffs because of this. At the end of last week, David Pepper talked to NBC Sports, and Thorsport sent a letter to NASCAR trying to get back into the playoffs. And ultimately that got denied. So what's your take on this whole ordeal? And I mean, I think it's a good thing that they didn't get let back into the playoffs, because as we talked about offline, parts and pieces break
all the time. And it's not a reason to, I mean, God, if we started going down that path, the amount of people that end up getting knocked out of the playoffs for broken pieces is ridiculous. So, I found it quite humorous that Ilmore figured out that it's hot in Vegas. I don't know that anybody was aware before that, that the racetrack in a desert was hot. I guess that, I don't even know. I don't even know where to start with that analysis, because you know that these trucks, for anywhere from 5 to 25 laps during a fuel run, are on the mat. They don't lift, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of load on the engines is going to stress them. But how you didn't see that coming is just, it's inexcusable.
I think.
And especially if you've got engines that are supposed to last like either 4 or 6 races.
Right. I don't know. Neff, I think it's kind of a load of crap. and I say that because Enfinger's blew on lap 6. So, yes, it was hot, but it wasn't because of...
Ain't that hot. Not at lap 6.
Yeah.
It better not be that hot at lap 6.
Yeah, or else there's more problems. So, yeah, at lap 6, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. So, regardless, NASCAR shut down Thor Sport's request of getting him back into the playoffs. And as we saw back in, I think it was, 2013... when Jeff Gordon got added to the playoffs as a 13th driver. I mean, that's just NASCAR making up rules on the go. And it kind of makes the sport look amateurish, in my opinion. So, good thing for NASCAR to stick to their gun and not let anyone back in. It sucks for Thor Sport because Grant Enfinger had arguably, you know, he won the regular season championship. And Johnny Sauter's had a tough year, but did win at Dover. Probably would have pointed his way in had his engine, you know, stayed up to beat, but unfortunately it didn't. So, tough break for Thor Sport, but yeah, good for NASCAR. I feel like this isn't even a debate.
Right.
So, whatever. Neff, any final things from this week?
I was impressed with the crowd. I mean, the facility at Charlotte has always been second to none, but the crowd I thought was really good. If I had to guess, I would say 3/4 full or more. Infield was pretty full versus the last couple of years, so it was a fun weekend. There was a lot of energy, which the Roval seems to have brought to it. For those of us that have been around for a while, or even those that haven't, it's a cool thing. You can have too much of a cool thing.
Right.
There's a lot of discussions about other intermediate tracks, some of which already have road courses cut out, others that are talking about it. The truck race at Eldora is cool because it's the only NASCAR race on a dirt track. The only race on a Roval is at Charlotte. Let's keep it that way. If you start inundating us with a bunch of Rovals, you're going to kill the sport. And we're doing enough to kill the sport without that, so let's not go down that path.
I mean, that's what we saw back in the heyday when there were so many mile and a halves. We like fast cars, and they performed well at mile and a halves. Well, let's build 10 mile and a halves, and now...
Well, and part of the mile and a half thing, too, was that similar to back in the 70s when you had multi-use stadiums, like Riverfront, Three Rivers, Fulton County, all of them where you had football and baseball together, they built all these mile and a half tracks because the IndyCar was, at the same time, looking to race ovals.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had the split, and part of the split when the IRL happened was that their focus was going to be running ovals. And so these organizations built these mile-and-a-half tracks anticipating they were going to get 2 NASCAR dates and have 1 or 2 IndyCar dates. And then you have people dying in the grandstands, and they decided they didn't want IndyCar at that many of these mile-and-a-half tracks, and so the usefulness of them went away pretty quickly. So that's part of the reason that they were building them. Yes, it was popular, but at the same time, less than a mile and a half, you couldn't really attract IndyCar for the most part, although they're going to be running, they do run occasionally at smaller tracks. But that was why they went down that path with mile and a half, because that was the track that wasn't too big so that the IndyCars didn't get too fast like they were at Michigan. But it gave you a chance to run both NASCAR and IndyCar in the same place.
Right, but what are fans begging for now? More road courses and short tracks, which, I agree 100% with you that we should just have one Roval. So too much of something, you know, will definitely hurt it. So that's, yep. you know, that's the point I'm getting at. But, yeah, more road courses, more short tracks, the better. So now we're going to Dover this weekend. We got a doubleheader, Xfinity Cup Series. Who do you got winning the Xfinity race?
Man, I hadn't even thought about it. I'm going to go with Allgaier. I'm going to keep going with Allgaier until he wins the damn race.
Well, there's five races to go in the year, so.
I mean, he's so due.
Agreed.
And hats off, by the way, to Reddick last week, too. He drove the wheels off that car at Charlotte to come out in second place. That was a good run for him. But, yeah, I'm going with Allgaier until he wins the dang race.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's got to, but we keep saying that he hasn't yet. So, he did win there last spring, but I'm going to pick Christopher Bell because he's won the last two races there. That 20 team, I mean, they're fast, obviously. He's, and like you said, enough, he just touted him winning maybe 100 cup races. So, he's won, what, 22% of the Xfinity races he's been in, as we talked about last week, probably 21 roughly now, since he didn't win at the Roval. But still, he wins almost every fifth race. And I know he won a couple weeks ago, but I don't know. Dover's his kind of been his playground, whether it's trucks or Xfinity. So I got Christopher Bell winning. Neff, the round of 12 starts this week for the Cup Series. Who you got winning?
This one is going to shock you. I'm going old school. The man owned Dover forever. Ooh. I think he still knows how to get around there better than anybody. I'm going with Jimmy Johnson to win at the Roval.
Interesting.
Somebody asked him about Dover post-race at Charlotte, and the gleam in his eye I haven't seen in 2 years.
Interesting.
And he is legitimately excited about going back to Dover.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good pick, obviously. He's got, what, 11 wins at Dover. His last win came at Dover 2.5 years ago now. I saw a stat that 19 drivers have won a race since Jimmy last won a cup race. So, I expect him to be strong as long as he can start. Last year, they had, you know, it was the first race in the round of 12. He had missed the round of 12 because of the Roval. And they had, like, a track bar break or something break underneath the car before they even took the green flag. So, hopefully that doesn't happen this week. And I mean, he's been fast lately. Maybe he can put it together. But I'm going to go with his teammate, Neff. I think I'm riding this Chase Elliott bandwagon. He always runs well at Dover. He's got an average finisher, I believe, a fifth. Should have won the race 2 years ago and then lost it to Kyle Busch on the last lap. Rebounded to win it last year. And, you know, he always runs well here. So I'm going to take Chase Elliott to win.
Good call.
So, Neff, as I mentioned earlier, we got Tyler Reddick coming up. Now, I want to preface this by saying that I talked to Tyler. This, you know, we taped this on Xfinity Series Playoff Media Day in Richmond a couple weeks ago. And he was getting a lot of questions about 2020. So I, you know, that was 2 days after the Hemric news. So I didn't ask him about that, but very enlightening conversation. Tyler's a lot of fun, great personality that I feel like a lot of people didn't realize until this year. He kind of broke out of his shell. But Neff, what's your take on Tyler? Because obviously he's right in this battle for the Xfinity Series Championship.
Yeah, Tyler's a good dude. Been around him a long time. He came up through the Mini-LL sprint car ranks and raced at Millbridge back when I was an announcer there. And he's a genuine, honest dude. He doesn't pull any punches. He's an aggressive driver. But at the same time, I think he's a very intelligent driver. He gives you everything the car can take. Pushes it a little bit when he has to, but doesn't go over the bounds very often. And I think he's poised and ready to go. I think he's done what he needs to do at these levels, and he's ready to go cup racing. So whenever they finally announce that's what he's doing, he'll be up there, and I think he'll be up there for a while. And he's again part of this flock that we've got coming in of. God, it's like 12 or 14 guys now that are barely in their 20s. They're not in 25 yet and are going to be around the sport for a very long time. And I think he's one of those guys that we're going to see winning races for a long time. And I look forward to interviewing him when he does because he gives some great interview.
For sure. I totally agree. This was a really fun interview. So let's get to my conversation with Tyler Reddick. All right, Tyler. So obviously you entered 2019 as the defending Xfinity Series champion with Junior Motorsports last year. This year, 5 wins, 20 top 5 finishes, really consistent. How would you gauge the season as a whole?
I mean, the regular season has been really awesome. To have that many top 5s, and when you consider what I call my, you know, my bad races outside of the top 5, where I've not finished great compared to the other 20. You know, 2 of them, we were battling for the lead at the very end of the race, and the others, you know, misfortunes. Daytona was one of those where if I didn't get turned sideways by the bump that was given to me, you know, whether it was on purpose or not, it doesn't matter. I probably could have battled and contended for the win in that race, too, and definitely had a top 5 and not went a lap down to Iowa being, you know, 2 or 3 laps away from getting Lucky Dog and getting back in it again. So when you think of what has been our races that haven't made up the rest of those top 5s, it gives me hope because those are races we could have very easily been top 5 if one thing would have just went a different direction or went our way. So I'm confident.
I'm curious, though, because last year, obviously, you were really inconsistent until, I would say, probably Darlington, Indianapolis, and you started to hit a stride going into the playoffs. So what's led to the consistency this year?
I think just kind of riding on the coattails of what got my head on straight coming into the playoffs last year and the mentality that allowed me to be consistent enough to make it to Homestead in a way or form. Obviously, we've been able to execute more efficiently and have faster race cars, and that's helped it. But it's just about being smart, understanding risk versus reward, and just being, I guess, a little bit more balanced and not so aggressive at times.
Now, 5 wins by an RCR driver in the Xfinity Series is the most since 2007. Kevin Harvick had 6 that year. I believe Jeff Burton had 5. Obviously, this team's been, you know, stout in the Xfinity Series for years, decades. But were you kind of surprised that it was so good this quickly?
I would say after Daytona, nothing has surprised me since. Just based off of, we come into this race, my first race with Randall in February, and our car's really, really, really good in the draft, in practice. And he comes and tells me after practice, like, "Don't you worry, man. Don't worry about qualifying. We're going to put this thing on the pole." And I looked at him and I laughed. Internally or externally, I laughed. And I said, "There's no way this car is sitting on the pole. It drives too good." It's like, "Ah, don't you worry. We bring good cars. And I would not be surprised if it sits on the pole." And the 2 cars sat on the pole. Had a flat tire, but sat on the pole. And ever since, nothing surprised me. I mean, they just work really hard on what they got. And effort has never been an issue.
Was there any worries, though? Because obviously you left Homestead at the highest of highs, winning the championship. Didn't have a great year. I think you would say that, too. But the championship kind of makes up for that. So were there any worries coming to RCR that maybe it wasn't the right move? But obviously it turned out probably to be the right move.
And there's always doubt when you have nothing else around you to back it up. And from the first moments I walked in the shop in the postseason, just the morale of everyone in the shop that greeted me for the first time, or people I've known for a while that just are working at RCR now, just really uplifted me even further than I already was. And I think I've said that before. And that took me even further than probably winning a championship did, is going into a place like that and a group of people, an organization fired up to go out and top what was accomplished the year before. And now, obviously, looking back on last year and the way it went, yes, it could have been very easy to overcome and do better than what I did for the majority of the year last year. But we've been able to do that. We've been able to go above it. We got the regular season championship. And, you know, anything from here on out is all about playoffs. It's almost like a different season to me. It's the playoffs. So, talking about playoffs.
With the playoffs starting, I might be wrong, but I don't think there's ever been a driver at the Xfinity level that's gone back-to-back with 2 different teams. I might be wrong.
If it was, it was a really long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what would that mean to you?
I never thought about that. That would be really cool. I know there's been back-to-back champs. I mean, Ricky and some others.
Right.
Ricky the most recent, I believe. So there's been back-to-back champs that are really good drivers. But to do with 2 different teams is definitely different. And that'd be kind of one of those odd but unique but really cool stats to just you never really think about. But we got a long way to go till Homestead, and a lot of different ways that this playoff can shake out. But for us, we're in a good spot. It's nice having those extra playoff points that we've built up over the season, and I hope we can build up a couple more going into the round of 8 because I feel like we might need them.
With the speed that you've had this year and the success, is it hard to pinpoint a flaw?
No, it's easy. I think we know what our flaws are. We've continued to eliminate some of the more major ones, but one we've still struggled with in the past, but hasn't been a major issue this year has been qualifying for us, or hasn't been a major issue in the last month has been qualifying for us. And with that being said, you know, I think that's where Christopher and Cole were able to one up us a little bit and take advantage of stage wins and get us somewhere, get an advantage in that aspect. Unfortunately, I think back to the one where we probably could have won two stages and won the race was Bristol, and we just had a slight miscommunication and cost us from getting those points. But it's one of those deals. We've been really, really good all year. I'm confident.
Now, you kind of asked this earlier in the press availability, but you know you won the regular season champion, got five wins just like Justin last year. any worries about that?
No. I mean, different year, different team, different driver, different crew chief. Everything's different from me to him. I have a lot of respect for Justin, Jason. They're good guys. They were my teammates last year, and they work really, really hard. But me and Randall Burnett and RCR are different than Justin Allgaier, Jason Burdett, and Junior Motorsports. So it's all what you make of it. I think if you let that pressure get to you, or if you have that mindset going into a playoff of, oh, man, we won all these races, but we're not where we need to be, it's very mental. So, but for me, on my mental aspect, I'm feeling really good. It's nice when you can go into a race, even when you haven't had the best day, but still find a way to take a win away from another driver. That's fun.
In what ways has coming to RCR, you think, bettered you as a driver?
You know, they have the Cup equipment in the same facility now. We're all under one roof. We kind of get to – we don't really, I guess, share a whole lot, but everyone's kind of under one roof, and everything's just kind of right there. And so, you know, the crew chiefs can talk about this or that, whether it's tires or what they did in the past or what Danny did last year with Randall, and it just all kind of flows really nicely. I think when they had all the Xfinity cars, it made sense for them to be down in the shop that they were. But now with just the one full-time car moved up to the Cup shop, it's just really seamless. Things just are really nice and work good for us.
So I got a couple more for you, Tyler. I asked Cole and Christopher the same question earlier this year, but do you feel like you're the championship favorite?
I guess someone asked me this earlier, but not today. But I think depending on how you perceive what's going to make you the champion – I say you could interpret it different ways. I feel like just from the pure just tenacity and just overall just how well we can overcome adversity, I'd say that I would pick us to be the favorite. When you think of outright speed all year long, you know, I would lean more towards Christopher and Cole. We have had great speed at races. We haven't been able to capitalize on every moment. But I think what stands out most about our team is how we won last week at Las Vegas. You know, you can all but count us out, and we will find a way to get ourselves back into the race, contend for a win, or contend for a top five. And I think that's what defines our team more than just having outright speed.
And that was the second strategy win, right? Because Michigan was also fairly similar.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be good having Randall Burnett, who's
– Yeah.
I was talking to Mike Neff.
Well, honestly, Michigan was a strategy win. It was a win because the other two crew chiefs didn't even think of strategy for some reason. I don't know what happened. But I remember thinking back to that Michigan race, and Jason, I think the 20 said stay out, and Shiplett, I remember Shiplett telling Cole, do whatever the 20 does, and the 20 and the driver crew chief had a miscommunication, and then it just opened the door for us. So I wouldn't say it was really a strategy deal. It's just everybody else kind of just missed it. But.
Sure. So
I'm not like Vegas.
Fair. So I'm not going to ask you about next year, but I do want to know what you've learned in the two Cup races. Daytona 500, obviously, probably being a crapshoot, but also Kansas getting a top 10. What'd you learn?
It's so much fun. I mean, I enjoy racing Xfinity Series, but you know they talk about it's the next big step, and it's not a big step. It's a huge step. I mean, you go right now we're racing against, I feel like, you know, 12 really solid drivers, and you go into the Cup Series and I feel like you've got 30 solid drivers, and you've got realistically about 20 to 24 cars that have a really good chance of winning. It's just all about executing and having the whole complete effort be the best that it can. So it's another really big step. You got a much more depth of field. Even the cars that aren't great, they can find ways to still be a real pain to pass for 15th when they're having a really good day. So that's what's exciting about that. It's a lot of really good cars. I found a Daytona. When they get three wide real quick, you got nowhere to go. It's not like an Xfinity race where you can just weave your way back to the front. Once the door shuts, it's shut, and you're three wide, and you're stuck. So that's just what's cool about it. You know, going from 30th or somewhere, wherever I qualified in that Kansas Cup race, to fighting all the way up to third at one point, there's so many good drivers in there. Just a lot of fun to race. That's probably the biggest takeaway.
I took a fan question. I guess you got a big fan of Chase Briscoe. He wants to know when you'll be making a return to the Chili Bowl and sprint cars. There's a story behind this I've heard.
Probably.
Of why you stopped racing.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll be too mad about me talking about it, but my grandfather's never been a huge fan of sprint cars. My mom and my dad got a little bit scared of them when fellow drivers were getting hurt when I was running them, but I was, I think, 11 years old when I was running a 410 non-wing, so I mean it was kind of crazy, and they are dangerous, but I just never look at that side of the racing. You know, I strap myself in the race car and I go out there to have a lot of fun, and 410 sprint cars are one of the most fun, pure, raw, just driving machines there are. There's pretty much no downforce. It's all about making the tire hook up with the dirt underneath you and making those tires grip with, you know, 900 or more horses strapped to the front of your sprint car. So they're so much fun. There's a lot to a little there, and they're just a lot of fun. So I don't know when I'm gonna make my return. I've got a little one on the way now, so I got to think about him too, and just figuring out when the time would be. I would have to guess it's going to be much later on, but I mean, there's a lot of things right now I got to focus on. Is Xfinity Series Championship, what's going to happen next year, and all that.
Didn't something happen at Millbridge though?
Oh yeah, yeah. And I flipped out of the place on non-wing night.
And you got stuck in a tree, right?
Yeah, I landed in my bumper got hooked by a fence post, and I was hanging over like a 30-foot drop or something.
You didn't fall though?
Well, I stayed buckled in. I looked down, and they're like, "Don't get out! You're gonna fall down!" I unbuckled. I about fell out. I fell down. It was pretty cool.
Cool, man. Thanks for your time, Tyler.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Tyler, talking all things 2019 and his success in his first year with Richard Childress Racing. Like I told Neff, I wanted to steer away from the 2020 plans, though I believe it's pretty clear on what he'll probably be doing next year at the Cup level. And also, great conversation there with Neff. Truly thought that was one of our better podcasts that we've done in the 2 years that we've been doing this, as we were both pretty passionate about certain subjects, whether that be NASCAR officiating or the Stenhouse Roush Fenway Racing deal. And again, great to have Eastern Shore Screen Printing on board with us this week. And if you'd like to come on board, we're definitely open for business as well. And with that, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Church Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. But until next week's show, where we review Dover, we out.